I'm Kev Jackson, and this is the Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors Podcast. The Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors Podcast is sponsored by Visit Bemidji. Find your great moments in Bemidji. And by Northview Bank, helping you find your piece of paradise in Paul Bunyan Country.
Hi, this is Toby Cavalli-Bog of Leisure Outdoor Adventures. Welcome to Paul Bunyan Country.
Hey, we're checking in with Matt Brewer of North Country Guide Service. Matt, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, we love to talk to you this time of year because I know this is one of your favorite times of year. Actually, there's so many favorite times of year for you, but I know you love turkey hunting. So, we got spring turkey hunting coming up in a few weeks, and I'm guessing you've got your licenses set.
Yeah, I've got licenses. I actually have to figure out a couple more tags that I'm trying to acquire. I need to actually figure that out probably today or tomorrow. I'll figure out if I can still get a tag or not. But yeah, Tate and I are both pretty jacked, and the whole family. Wife's already got a tag, and I think I might have my daughter talked back into turkey hunting this year. So, super excited. And with Tate driving now, he of course has offered to take all of these people turkey hunting. And normally I would be upset with that, but since Minnesota only gives you one tag, I'm more than happy to take as many of his friends out as humanly possible, because it just means I get to turkey hunt more.
Well, that's a very good point. So yeah, you get one tag, and did you guys all go first round?
So Tate's still considered youth, so he gets to hunt all the seasons.
Oh, nice.
And then because of my busy work schedule, I'm hunting season C, and my wife will hunt season D, and then, my daughter, we can take her anytime, and my son's friends, we can take them anytime, and then we're mixing a couple South Dakota trips in there, and then going to try to bounce over to Wisconsin and possibly Wyoming. I need to see if I can still get a Wyoming tag or not, but that's one that's on the list as well. No real big trips again this year. Last year, I traveled to a few states for the National Wild Turkey Federation as a writer doing articles, so it was nice to branch out a little bit again last year. But this year, nothing really exciting. Staying pretty close, but I still have this goal of shooting a turkey in every state, and there's 49, so I'd love to do it, shoot my final birds of the 49 of the U.S. Slam on my 49th birthday, so that gives me 20 years.
Yeah, it does.
Okay, maybe it's more like six.
All right.
But yeah, that's the goal, so.
How many states left for you?
I have over 20 left.
Okay, you got some work to do.
Yeah, so next year I'm going to have to hammer out four or five states. So next year my son is not offering to take 12 others hunting. next year I'm going to play greedy and try to save up all my vacation and maybe do four or five different states next year, and maybe even bypass Minnesota and just try to do these other ones.
Okay. Well, I know that you've been into turkey hunting for a long, long time. It's really exploded up here, as the turkey population has really exploded up here as well. And now it's one of the most anticipated things in the spring, pretty close to the walleye opener at this point. People love turkey season.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And I know we've talked about it on the show before. When I first started turkey hunting, as a wee lad, we had to do applications, and you would only get drawn maybe every 2 to 3 years, and it was for a very small section of Minnesota. So if you can imagine that, it sometimes takes 3 years to draw a tag, and you got to hunt basically three counties, and that's all the turkey hunting that was available in Minnesota back then.
Yeah.
And now you can hunt them statewide, and there's turkeys everywhere. So,
Yeah, I think one of the big questions was, could they survive our snow and winters? And the obvious answer now is yes, they can.
Yeah, they do just fine.
They really do. And you know, I'm hearing reports that they're going further north all the time. So I think border to border pretty soon, if they're not already all the way to the top of the border.
Oh, they are. Yep. You know, my folks are up in Thief River, and my godparents are in Roseau, and yeah, both places are flooded with turkeys. And when I used to have my bear camp in Winoska, which is, you know, basically just south of the border, we had turkeys frequenting our property, and yeah, they're top to bottom, side to side, they're everywhere.
So for somebody who would love to get into this, but doesn't know anything about it, give us the turkey hunting for dummies primer.
See, call me when when all the tags are gone and I don't have anybody else to hunt with. You just call me and I'll take you. And since you can't guide for turkeys in Minnesota, you get to go for free.
Oh!
No, no, it's basically, this, like, scouting is obviously the most important thing for beginners. You know, newer hunters, you're probably not going to be the greatest at calling, and you're not going to know, like, habits or anything like that. So for newer hunters, finding, you know, a field that you can get permission for that has turkeys frequenting it, that's the best bet. Like, if you can get permission on private property where there's turkeys and they're hanging out in the same areas every day, and they are kind of creatures of habit, especially in the spring, you know, they basically go from roost to food, and you're basically trying to get near the hens because the toms are going to be chasing the hens, and if you can put yourself in front of them and just let them walk in front of you, that's going to be your best bet. And then as things advance a little bit and you get better at calling and understanding habits, then it gets a little more technical and advanced. You know, then you start looking at where they roost and where they're pitching down, and like secondary strutting areas and areas where, you know, like the secondary toms, the ones that are getting beat up by the big guys, you know, they can't just go prance around in the open trying to pick up chicks. They need to go do it down an alley.
Yeah.
So if you can find those alleys, those birds are going to be a lot dumber and a lot more susceptible to calling. And some of those hunts can be really, really good because you don't have to pull them away from hens. And if you're hunting like deep woods turkeys, which a lot of those turkeys turn out to be, they'll just sit and strut all day and gobble on like a secondary shelf in some hilly area in the deep woods. If you can get on those birds, they're usually pretty dumb and easy. So,
okay. So talk a little bit about the future of turkey hunting in Minnesota. As we know, the population's expanded. Is there talk of expanding the licenses availabilities or anything like that, or the season even, or are we pretty much where we're going to be?
Well, I think there has to be a change. You know, we've already seen so many changes. Like I said, from when I was a kid, those three counties, it's expanded, and then it, you know, got a little bigger, and then there was like a south zone, and it was still closed in the north, and then, you know, it became statewide, and it's still zoned out. And now with the abundance of them, and people having so much success and the sport growing so much in the state, you know, they switched it from, if I remember, you used to have to pick a season and it was an application. So you had to draw that season. And now you only have to apply for special permit areas. And then they allow you to hunt season F if you don't, you know, kill a bird during your season. So they've already changed things a lot, but they definitely need to start looking at what other states are doing with high densities like we're starting to see.
Okay.
You know, like Wisconsin, you draw for a zone and a time frame in that zone, and then if you're successful or not successful, you can still look at like other zones. So like I can shoot one in the northern part of Wisconsin, and then, you know, like maybe a week later I can shoot one in central Wisconsin, and a week later I can shoot one in southern Wisconsin. And it's all just on like tag availability and zones and population. So Minnesota might have to start thinking about going that route, because we're definitely, hunters are definitely not putting a dent in the population. And not saying we want to like eradicate them or anything, but there's going to become a point where we need to start some control, and we need to start thinning them out in some areas, because I know places like the cities, people are hitting them with cars all the time, and like a 26-pound tom, it doesn't just leave a little dent in your car. Like, right. They're going through windshields, you know, they're causing some serious damage. So, I would love to see it go to maybe not a two-bird limit, but maybe like you're allowed two birds if you apply for certain areas, you know, not like Nebraska or Kansas where, like, you buy a tag and you get two, and you can just shoot two toms in one day. Maybe they spread it out, like you can hunt season A and season C, or I don't make the rules. I'm not good at making rules. but there needs to be probably something changing or something happening here soon. So,
okay. Another thing you like to do before other people did it was fish eel pout, and you're telling me you got to do quite a bit this contracted season.
Yeah, I was really concerned that there wasn't going to be an eel pout season, but we got lucky and the burb started going a little bit earlier than normal. You know, it wasn't like hot and heavy early, but we saw fish using spawning areas much earlier than normal years. And for us, having access to, you know, I have side-by-sides and sleds and things like that, and a kid who's very ambitious and loves to walk and scout. So when he decided to make a 2.1-mile walk out to give it a try and actually caught a few, then it piqued my interest. And we had some people book last-minute trips, because I ended up with piles of openings because I wasn't chasing around running rentals this year.
Sure.
So we had some last-minute bookings for that, for clients who have wanted to chase eel pout for several years and haven't had a chance or gotten on the books early enough. And we started running trips, and they were good, and they lasted for quite a while, and there weren't a whole lot of people out doing it. You know, accessibility, you know, if people couldn't drive their vehicle out there, they weren't going. So they'd be limited to, you know, I might be out on my side by side and there'd be one other group that decided to walk all the way out, or in a different area. People who, one night we passed people who were stuck and they were like buried. You could tell they were wanting to go out eel pout fishing, because it was after walleye season had closed. And when we came back, they had given up. They got unstuck and just left the lake. So so access to the areas was tough, but if you could get out there, it was pretty good fishing. We were averaging like 5 to 6 fish a night, so not gangbusters. You know, we didn't have any of those like 30, 40 fish nights, but enough to be consistent and have fun with it. And we were getting some big walleyes mixed in, so that was fun. And it was a good season.
I talked to the two Jasons and got their thoughts on the future. I mean, it is a sport fish now. Are you seeing, in your mind, do you see a season and or limit coming up?
Well, yeah, that's been the talk for a long time. I think it needs to just get dialed in and passed. But yeah, I think eventually it's going to happen. It's been, you know, talked about and kind of bouncing around for a long time. So I definitely see it. And with all the research going on with eel pout, I think, you know, that adds fuel to the fire, and it's going to make things have to change at some point. So yeah, I'm excited for it. But I think a lot of the people who are fishing them kind of have an understanding and
Sure.
like a respect now. So like even clients I have that come and have not never done it before, like they'll keep a couple
Mm-hmm.
so that, you know, they can try it or their friends can try it or family. But they're never keeping like more than three or four fish, you know, after they have enough for one meal to test it out and try it, you know, then they're like, all right, let's throw the rest back. And so I think everybody's kind of, everyone has that, like that head nod, like, yep, you know the deal.
Yeah.
Like, if we're going to go do this, you're throwing them back. So I haven't kept one in many years. And Tate actually went out with some buddies and they had one hooked pretty deep that was bleeding and they kept it. And I was kind of excited. I'm like, oh man, like I'm not excited that you guys killed a pout, but I haven't had it in a few years. So, I was pretty excited to eat some and yeah, it still tastes just as good as I remember it. So.
You know, you said you weren't great at making rules, but in your ideal world, what would be the limit? And I mean, there's a limited time when you can actually catch them. So I don't know if you need to actually, you know, trace out a season, but what would you think would be a reasonable limit?
Yeah, I mean, you can catch them all winter. So from the time there's ice until the time there's no ice and maybe even a couple weeks, few weeks after that when the water's still really cold, like you can catch them during that time frame and you can do pretty well on some nights. Like if you stumble into an area where they're feeding heavily, like you can do pretty well. But realistically, most of the fish kept are obviously during spawn. It's really hard to pinpoint a time frame.
Mm-hmm.
But if I were to be the one in charge or making a rule, I would say from like February 1st until the end of ice season, they make it like a 3-fish limit or a 2-fish limit. Because those fish are so susceptible to being caught. Like if you decide you're going to go catch a neopout during that time frame, you're probably going to go catch a neopout if you know where they frequent or anything about them. So going out and catching a limit probably isn't that hard if the limit were 2 or 3. Or maybe since it's, you know, fresh coming off of a rough fish into a game fish, maybe you just make the limit 5 and just call it 5 for the entire season. And that's your daily or whatever. It's really hard to make any kind of judgment on it. But somewhere in that realm would probably be fine. As long as people aren't going out during spawn and catching, you know, keeping 10 to 12 a night, every night for like a week straight, you know, those are the ones that are impacting the fisheries and causing issues. And I don't think there's very many of those people left anymore or doing it anymore. I think the education from a lot of fishermen who have, you know, fallen in love with the fish, the education is out there enough where I just think those days are kind of gone anyway.
Okay. Yeah. I agree with that. That's, we have a very, as you say, very smart group of anglers in the state. They're pretty concerned about the future, and they usually make the right decisions on their own most of the time.
Yeah, and a few bad apples isn't going to ruin everything. You know,
yeah.
you get like three guys who decide they're going to go out and just pillage the spawning grounds. You know, even that isn't, you know, it's not great, but it's not going to have a gigantic impact on things as a whole. It's when you get large groups that are keeping large numbers and they're doing it day after day, you know.
Yeah.
That's when it starts to have a pretty big impact. So, for the call.
Much more to come with Matt Brewer of North Country Guide Service, including edible hunting. That's next.
I'm Eric Osberg from Otter Tail Country, a place where the fishing is so good that not even Kev Jackson can make it look bad. And this is Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors.
Experience great moments when you visit Bemidji this summer, where you can catch fish as legendary as Paul Bunyan himself.
from panfish and walleye to bass and the elusive muskie, Bemidji provides an exceptional fishing opportunity for all.
Immerse yourself in the Northwoods setting and experience the natural wildlife Bemidji has to offer.
Find out more at visitbemidji.com.
Great moments in Bemidji.
Great moments in Bemidji.
This is, of course, Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors, and the outdoors is what we live for in the state of Minnesota, and so many people throughout the state of Minnesota look to our area to have that dream. We have Mark Harmon with us from Northview Bank. Mark, you're one of those people that helps people live their dream.
Absolutely. When people ask me who I am, I often mention that I'm a father, I'm a veteran, I'm an Eagle Scout, I'm a volunteer. But I never forget to mention I'm an outdoors fan. I love the outdoors. I grew up in the Illinois area, moved up to Minnesota in 2009. We took a chance in our life. You know, it seemed like a big jump to move up this way. At some point, we get our career started. And then at another point, we find that piece of property, whether it's out there in the woods or on the lake. We start figuring out where we belong. And we knew that we belonged in northern Minnesota. And if we missed the importance of the outdoors, I'd be lying to you. We take it all in. You know, one of the best pieces of advice that we got when we first moved up here, they're like, when you learn what your winter hobby is, you'll never want to leave. So, yeah, it takes a while to get dialed in a little bit, but we love it.
He's Mark Harmon of Northview Bank. He's the guy that helps you make your Paul Bunyan country dreams come true. Northview Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender, subject to credit approval. Find out more at northviewbank.com. Mark, thanks for being here today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
This is Dick Beardsley, and this is Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors.
My guest today, Matt Brewer from North Country Guide Service. Well, we're just coming off the worst winter storm of the season here on Easter week. So that changes things. I was thinking you were going to be out in the woods looking for mushrooms, you know, way early this year, but maybe not now.
Just don't even get me started. So unhappy. And I've heard so many people, like patients and clients, upcoming clients, and just general people I've talked to, they're like, it's all my fault. Like, took the plow off the truck and, you know, put the sled away for the season. And I'm like, oh, if it's anybody's fault, it's mine. Like, my fish houses are tucked away. plows are off. Snowmobile is already prepped for summer and put away in the shop. Like, so it's all of our fault. But yeah, this is a nasty one. And like, we were already like toying with turkeys. Like, we were already calling back and forth and starting to scout, and they were actually starting to use some of their spring routine areas and like strutting and gobbling like crazy. And then the storm hit, and like, I haven't seen a turkey in 4 days.
Yeah.
So they just disappeared when the storm came. But yeah, things were looking really good. Like, we need the moisture. So I don't mind that this came. It just wasn't very fun to live through.
Right.
Like, getting up in the morning and going to work, I'm like, oh, am I going to make it to work? It wasn't that terrible. But after such a calm, mild winter, it was pretty rough.
So when do the edibles usually come out for you?
Usually, well, if you want to pin it down to like a certain time, like if you are going to pick morels in the spring in this area, Mother's Day weekend, right around fishing opener, is the best time to pick mushrooms in northern Minnesota. So you know, we're a ways off from that.
Sure.
And I figured it would have been a little early. I have picked them as early as the last day of March. That's the earliest I've ever found a morel. And it was just like a little thumbnail size one, very early season. You know, we've had some springs where we've already had 60 degree weather, and like, I have memories of like already crappie fishing and that have popped up on Facebook and stuff. So we've had some pretty early springs in the past. And I think it was like, don't quote me on it, but I think it was like 2008-ish. Somewhere in that realm, mm-hmm. like we were picking mushrooms real early, and we were already catching crappies, and like my boat was already fully broken in and ready, and I'd been on the Rainy River several times already. So it's, you know, this year. We thought we were going to have a super early spring, but it didn't actually turn out that way. So,
no, it didn't.
It's all going to depend on like when the soil temps reach the right temperature and the amount of moisture we get. So, I had a lot of people asking, like, are we going to be picking morels soon? I'm like, well, the soil temperatures are still, like, just above freezing. So, no, we're not going to be picking them anytime soon. Like, we need some highs, you know, highs in the 60s during the day and lows in the 40s at night. That's when you're going to start to see mushrooms. So,
okay. Based on what you saw last year, maybe whatever you've done winter fishing-wise, how are the populations for our various sport fish looking in Minnesota? Or in Paul Bunyan country, I should say.
I think pretty good. We've seen some interesting changes in the Bemidji area, specifically like, you know, the zebra mussels and the starry stonewort. The invasives have changed the dynamics of some of the lakes, and then we've also had increased population densities of fish we didn't realize were even in some of the lakes, like the amount of smallmouth bass in the turtle chain has greatly impacted like the walleye population. So, you know, I lived on turtle for many years and never saw a smallmouth ever, and used to be able to go out and catch a limit of walleyes every day pretty easily. And now when I'm guiding on turtle, I'm catching, there are some days where I'm guiding and I'm catching as many smallmouth as I am walleyes. So, you know, things have changed a lot, and Lake Bemidji, it's still Lake Bemidji. It's a walleye factory. It's a perch factory. There's a lot of pike, and, there's some really big muskies that are very hard to catch. So nothing has really changed as far as densities on Bemidji or Irving that I've noticed, but we've had to adapt and change the way we fish. You know, the secchi disc, the water clarity is like drastically changed compared to even 5 years ago. So, so I think just changing how we fish and what we fish for, is going to be the recipe for a good day on the water. So,
hey, you got to go down to Vegas for the SHOT Show. Tell me about the SHOT Show. What is the SHOT Show actually?
So SHOT Show it's actually one of the 10 largest conventions in the world. And it's mainly focused on the outdoors. So, it's basically when all of the new guns are released for the year, all of the new ammo, new hunting clothing, new hunting products, decoys, you know, everything, binoculars, optics. And it's gigantic. Like, it spans across like three casinos and one casino that has a large convention area. It's like three floors of it. It's gigantic. So, and I typically go every year. And, you know, I'm there to review some of the new guns and new ammo and new products and write articles. And it's always a great time. But this year was really special. Tate got to go with me. So we actually flew the whole family down, and we spent a week there. And that was kind of our vacation this year. And it was a blast. Lots of cool new products. And we were there with Federal Premium Ammunition, so got to see all the new shot shells and new rifle cartridges and some of the new products from brands like Primos and Bushnell. And it was really a good time. And Tate thought it was cool looking at some of, you know, there's like tricked out buggies and there's like military stuff there. So seeing some of the buggies that are used in the military, you know, that are like, one of them has turrets all over, and he just thought that was the coolest thing. So it's a really fun show, and you get to see all these new products and all the old trusty products. Like, I always make an effort to go to the Steyr booth to look at all the AUGs. And most people who don't know what that is, the AUG was like the rifles used in the movie Die Hard.
Oh, okay.
So some of those more classic guns that are pop culture-y. Some of those are always fun to see too. So yeah, it was a good time. We didn't get to see even half of the show. But what we did see was great. And then you get to see everybody, you know, all your favorite outdoor personalities are there for SHOT Show. And like, if you wanted to meet Jim Shockey or Eva Shockey, or, you know, if you wanted to meet any outdoor personality, that's the place to do it. So.
Was there any one item you saw that you said, oh, I need this?
Well, I spent most of my time, because I can't remember if we talked about my Texas whitetail hunt or not last time we talked, but I was lucky enough to go to Texas on a whitetail hunt to test out some of Federal's new ammo and shot the buck of a lifetime. And so I spent most of my SHOT Show collecting more photos and data on that particular shell, because I had so many articles I had to pump out on this product. So that was where I spent most of my time. And that obviously is the product that I really like the most. So most deer hunters in Minnesota would be familiar with the Fusion round from Federal, and now Fusion is tipped. It actually has a polymer tip on it now, so shoots flatter, faster, and has better ballistic coefficient. So that would be my favorite product coming out, because that's the one I spent the most time looking at and researching. So that was really cool. And then, you know, having a teenager, we had to go to look at the gun from Fortnite. so again, a pop culture thing. So I almost had to force him. He's like, I don't need to see that. And I'm like, oh, come on. You played Fortnite for years. You have to see it in person. So to go see that was pretty cool. And they always have some neat new products and fun stuff.
Before we call it a day, we do have to do a Fast Five.
Sure.
Fast Five.
Who's with me?
Yeah. Here we go. Matt Brewer, Fast Five. Question number one. Do you have a bucket list place and or species that you want to fish before it's all over?
Ooh, I've done a lot of them. I would love to chase Arapaima. Do you remember the show River Monsters?
Vaguely.
Oh, man. So there's a fish, these fish called Arapaima, and I think they're in like Brazil or something. There's these just like gigantic gar looking creatures that are just gnarly. Let's go more realistic. How about just a gar?
Okay.
Alligator gar. Alligator. Before I die, I want to do it. And that's realistic. So.
And where do you want to do that? In Brazil?
No, I think alligator gar you can do in like Texas, Oklahoma.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's very realistic.
All right. Question number two. Is there a bucket list species and or place you want to hunt before it's all said and done?
Before I die, I'd love to shoot a doll sheep. That would be cool.
Where would we find those?
Very expensive. in the mountains, I don't even know which states all offer them, but like, and you know, like Colorado, Utah, places like that, I think.
Okay. Question number three, across all sports, who is Matt Brewer's favorite athlete of all time?
Oh, you got some good ones this week. I was like a big Sergei Fedorov, a big hockey guy. Fedorov was probably my favorite, like, in my youth, like, the way I idolized that guy. Or Eddie Belfour. Eddie Belfour, final answer.
Okay.
Got to watch him play college hockey when he was at UND before he transferred. and then got to watch him when he was on the Blackhawks when he was a pro. So we'll go Eddie Belfort.
All right. I thought it might be a hockey guy. All right, here we go. Question number four. And you actually do have a regular job, so to speak. But if you weren't doing this, what would you be doing?
I would love to be a mountain man. Like, no job, off the grid, living on solar. Like, and how about a writer about how to be a mountain man? That's my dream job.
Okay. Love it. And finally, question number five. Will the Minnesota Vikings win a Super Bowl in your lifetime?
No.
All right, an honest man.
Well, I don't think I'm going to live that long, so. So it's a curved answer a little bit, but.
Yeah. Well, Eric Osberg is on your side. He said that last week. No, no, not.
Yeah, I think if I can make it to 95, then we got a shot. But.
Well, I'm going for 120. I'm trying to convince myself I'm only halfway through life. So
there you go. Perfect.
All right, Matt, if people are getting ready for their summer vacations and they want to go edible searching or fishing or all the other things you do, how do they get signed up at North Country Guide Service?
Just go to northcountryguides.com, and all of our socials are listed there, phone number, email. North Country Guides is your portal for all of it.
All right. He is Matt Brewer from North Country Guide Service. Always a great conversation when Matt's on the show. Matt, thanks so much for your time today.
Yeah, thanks. Paul Bunyan Country.